Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of Divergent by Design, a podcast that is dedicated to exploring the ways that you can use universal design for learning in your classroom. My name is Lynn Kleinmeier, and I am joined today by the ever jovial Jonathan Wiley.
Jovial. I like it.
Yeah. You know my obsession with alliteration, so I had to go with that.
You're expanding my vocabulary here today, Lynn. Mm-hmm.
So, Jonathan, what does jovial mean?
Lighthearted. Does that work?
It does.
Yeah?
Absolutely. By Jove, I think you've got it.
By Jove.
It's a Zeus reference. It's actually where the word jovial comes from, is Jove, which is Zeus's Roman name.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
I'm obsessed with words.
This may be a separate podcast, though.
It is a whole separate podcast, and you are going to have a lot to delete and edit. You're welcome. All right. So, Jonathan, today we are talking about customizing the learning experience, which is really, when you think about that UDL framework, we've kind of moved into the column of representation. So contextualizing that representation column for people who maybe aren't familiar, what would you tell them is the focus?
So the representation, and I think we've talked about this before, it's the what of learning. And specifically today, we're talking about perception and different ways that we perceive content that is presented to us. And more specifically, content that's presented to students and, you know, ways that we can break down some barriers or just give students more of that choice that we talked about in that last episode on engagement, more choice for how they access that content.
Right. And when we think about that perception piece, you know, perception is really about the ways our students can encounter or experience the learning, the materials, for example, that we're giving them in a way that makes sense for them. And so I kind of think about this twofold. Part of it is meeting perceptual needs for students who maybe have accessibility requirements. Maybe there's a disability when it comes to auditory needs or visual needs. Mm-hmm. So there's part of that. And, you know, you think about the need for accessible educational materials, which is really, once again, providing a way for students to interact with those materials that is respectful and representative of what their learning needs are.
Yeah, and CAST have a whole website dedicated to accessible educational materials. We can link to that in the show notes for this episode, but they have a great quote on there that says, "Accessible versions of educational materials may mean the difference between learning barriers and learning opportunities."
Mm, love that.
I know. So maybe, do you want to round up for us a little bit about what is an accessible educational material? What does that term mean?
Accessible educational materials are materials that are presented in a way that's alternative from maybe a traditional sense that really are, once again, respectful of the needs of that particular student. So, for example, if you've got something that's in a print form, but you have a student with a visual impairment that maybe needs that support, they need to have that material provided in a way that gives them access to the content so that they can interact with and make meaning on their own. So that would mean providing it in an auditory format, for example. Vice versa, if you've got a student who needs some support auditorially, that you are providing that visual. So it's about knowing what the needs are of your students and removing barriers of them being able to interact with the materials.
Right. And I think that can be a challenge for teachers in the classroom, because sometimes the materials that we're given to teach with, the textbooks, the whatever else, we only have that one format to do it. And so we need to try and think about some of the different ways that we can digitize these materials or find alternatives to these materials so that they can be made more accessible for learners that might want that accommodation.
Right. And if you've been listening to Jonathan and I, you know that we are digital learning consultants. And so one of the powerful pieces of being able to harness technology in the classroom is that it can provide an entry point for students in terms of accessibility. So it can be leveraged in a really, really meaningful way. And I think about our previous conversation too, is that you do have students who maybe have some perceptual needs, like we've mentioned already, you know, the visual or the auditory impairments that maybe need that extra support. But, you know, the other piece of this conversation about that perceivable piece is also, it kind of circles back to our episode we just recorded in terms of engagement, thinking about the choice and the ability to customize the learning experience to suit the preferences and maybe some of the in-the-moment needs for all students. And so I circle back to in our introductory episode, we talked about, you know, necessary for some, that there are pieces that those students need, but they're also beneficial for a great number of students. So it's really about empowering all students to be able to customize the learning experience in a way that's respectful of them.
Yeah, and I'd encourage you as the listener maybe to think about some accommodations that you've made for yourself in your own use of your own devices. So, I mean, you just small things like on my phone, I have it automatically switched to dark mode at sunset, because I'm getting ready, I'm winding down for the night, and I don't have this screen as bright or as glaring as it is before. Everything's darker, and that's my preference. My wife and I both wear glasses. Her vision is significantly worse than mine, let's say, which probably explains how she ended up with the person she ended up with. But she has a lot more Zoom settings built into her computer so that when she's reading things online and things like that, she needs that print and that text a little bit larger so that she can easily access it. And, you know, she doesn't have a visual disability other than she needs to wear glasses for reading, but she needs that accommodation on her device. So there's lots of examples of, like you said, you know, all kinds of different people who may want to make those accommodations.
Exactly. So really what this particular component of the UDL framework is really all about is presenting things in multiple formats, offering some voice and choice in how that the students interact with content itself, empowering students to customize their learning experience, and really leveraging some of those built-in accessibility features that are available to allow students to support their own learning needs and once again, customize that learning experience. So we're talking today about some of those actual ways that you can go about doing that. So let's start with, apparently my word of the day is customizing. Let's do a word count of how many times Lynn talks about this. But when we think about being able to own the learning experience and that ability to customize the display of information, Jonathan, you already mentioned a couple different things. You talked about the dark mode and switching that, you know, with your device. You talked about your wife zooming in on things. What are some other things that you think about when it comes to that customizing that display of information?
Yeah, I mean, if we stick with those, you know, things that are built into all the devices that we're using, I think it's a really exciting time for things like that, because all the major technology companies, your Apples, your Microsoft, your Googles, they are all coming out with more and more and more options in this arena. So you've got additional things like text-to-speech built into basically all digital devices that you can use today. You've got things like speech-to-text also built into these devices too, where it can read things aloud to you from the screen. All kinds of magnifying and zoom things. So it's just a matter of, you know, digging into whatever device you have, whether it's Windows or Mac or iOS or Chromebooks, they all have an accessibility section there. And, you know, if you're not familiar with that, I'd encourage you maybe just to dig in and see what some of those options are for you, but also, you know, for your students so that you can help them if they are having trouble accessing some of that content.
Yeah. And I think about what you were just talking about, the devices themselves having accessibility built in. Mm-hmm. I also think about a lot of tools that really have grasped onto this and leveraged this idea of using immersive reader. So I think about Flipgrid and Canvas and Wonderopolis, and there's so many that have some of these built-in ideas. So with Immersive Reader, if you're unfamiliar, it's built into a platform like, I'm going to go with Pear Deck, for example, because we're Pear Deck fans here, where a student can click on it and it allows them the customization of that text. So they can listen to text. They can customize the background colors, kind of like going with that dark mode kind of theme. They can change the font and the font size. And there's some powerful features built in so that students can interact with the content in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I really love the Immersive Reader. I think it's got so many options. It lets you do line spacing. It'll even do things like highlight the nouns or the verbs in a passage for you. And like you said, it is built into a number of really great tools. You'll find it inside of Flipgrid now. You'll find it inside of Canvas. It's in websites like Wonderopolis. So you just need to look for that Immersive Reader icon. It's probably in an EdTech tool that you are using and is built in right there. I think it'd be awesome to model some of that for students and just say, hey, if you guys need it or you know you want to use it, this is here. It's just one click away, and then you can customize all the text on that page.
Exactly. And, you know, in addition to Immersive Reader, there are quite a few tools that can be leveraged to, once again, offer that customization piece. Quite a few districts that we work with use tools, extensions like Read and Write or Snap and Read. So there's a variety of things out there that really, once again, are being intentional about providing the support for students who maybe need it, but also are really great for allowing students to kind of pick and choose how they're going to interact with the content based on their preferences.
And sometimes I think that, you know, there's little things that are built in that we don't even necessarily think about as an option for customizing content, because, you know, we've talked so far, I guess, about, you know, most of our content being print-based, but sometimes, you know, we do access things either as video or audio. And I think back to our challenge video from last week where we had the Alicia, the ISTE speaker. I think that was done as part of an ISTE Ignite session. And as you know about those ISTE Ignite sessions,
you have to talk really fast.
You have to talk pretty fast if you want to get through all your information, because they give you a very limited amount of time. And I'm going to just hold my hands up and say that when I watched that video, I slowed down the video to 0.75 speed because she was giving so much great information, but my brain was having trouble keeping up and processing it at the same time. So just having her talk a little bit slower was a good modification for me. Maybe you're listening to this podcast with us right now and you have us on half speed. I did meet somebody who listens to one of our other podcasts, and they said they listen to us on double speed because that's just how they get through more content quicker. So, you know, these things are available. These are built into some of the tools and things that we use.
Right. That's such a great point of, you know, that ability to be mindful of your time is a great way to honor yourself. Yeah. You know, and I think about, you know, True Confession Time, we often use a tool called Voxer to communicate, especially amongst our team. And I don't listen to anyone on single speed. I listen always on double, if not triple. But, you know, I mean, and I think about, I must do that an awful lot, because as you were talking, I thought about when I listen to audiobooks, I never listen at regular speed. When I listen to podcasts, I speed things up to be more efficient with my time, apparently.
Yes. Well, if you are one of those people that listen to us at 1.5x or 2x, then, and we meet in real life, you will notice that we don't maybe sound quite as you might expect, but we're still nice people.
Yeah. Well, yeah, don't judge us. We don't always talk like chipmunks. So as we kind of think about this, you know, talking about like that customization of that visual display, one of the things that you also have to kind of push ourselves to think about is really diving into that, offering alternatives, both in the auditory information that we share, but also the visual information. We so often, as educators, we convey meaning. I mean, that's kind of our job.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking about the ways in we're asking our students to interact with the content, either the verbal content or the visual content that we are sharing with them, and really challenging ourselves. So when I think about the alternatives to auditory information, this is a way for our students to really interact with the verbal parts of learning in alternative ways. And by that I mean, you know, we can't just rely always on the spoken word. Sometimes we have to provide students with the print or some sort of text-based alternative so that they can concretely ground themselves in understanding what we're talking about. So, you know, I think about your example that you were sharing, Jonathan, about listening to that video from our challenge.
Yeah.
At, you know, a slower speed. I also wonder if it would have been helpful to have like a transcript. You know, that could be another alternative. I am not a very good auditory learner. And so I need to see things for myself in order to perceive that. And I know that about myself as a learner. And so I think about ways that I already step up as a learner to interact with that auditory content in a different way. But I think about, okay, how can I challenge myself to really surface that in a classroom a little bit more? So I think about things like closed captioning on videos. If you've got a student who has an auditory impairment, well, then that is something that they need in order to interact with the content. But sometimes, I'll be honest, I'm in a loud room where I can't pay attention. It helps me if I have those closed captionings going across the bottom so that I'm really making sure I'm understanding what's happening on that video.
I'm 100% with you. I use closed captions as well at home. And, you know, when my kids go to bed at night and I watch a TV show that maybe I wouldn't watch when the kids were around, then, you know, it allows me to have the volume a little bit lower. But I'll tell you this, if you turn on closed captions, you also get a richer experience, in my opinion, because it will tell you things like the conversations that background characters are having that you may not normally have heard about. It will tell you the name of the type of music that was being played at the time, and you're like, oh, what is that sounding? Yeah, and it will tell you all these extra additional things that you can put in there. So I'm a big fan of closed captions, and maybe I could even just merge together a little bit of our customizing auditory and customizing display by telling you that if you watch videos on YouTube, you can actually customize what those closed captions look like on your screen. So if you press the gear icon in the corner of the player and then you click on subtitles, you'll be able to see the number of different languages that are available. So I'm looking at a TED Talk one now. I can have my closed captions in any one of 46 languages, which is pretty impressive.
That is quite impressive. Talking about customizing your learning experience right there.
There you go. And if I dive into the options a little bit further, I can choose what the font is. I can choose what the font color is, the font size, the background color, the opacity, the font opacity, the window opacity, all kinds of different options for making my closed captions better for me. And YouTube, if you are signed in, will remember all those preferences that you put on there.
So I think it's pretty cool. Obviously, YouTube has closed captioning built in, but in your Chrome browser, in your settings, so if you go over to your three dots and click on settings, then if you open up your advanced and find your accessibility settings, the very first thing that you'll see there is this option for live captioning, and you can toggle that on. And what that will do is any audio or video files in your Chrome browser, it will automatically create a live transcription, which I think is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's like magic. It works on podcasts, it works on videos. If you go to like NPR's site and you start playing NPR radio, the captions just appear at the bottom of the screen. So that is a great one. And you just turn it on once and you don't have to worry about it anymore. I think it's great for schools, especially if you are sharing video and you don't want to share it on YouTube because you want to keep it in-house. It works on Google Drive videos as well. So great option to have.
Yeah. And just challenging yourself to think differently. You know, we've talked a little bit about videos, and there are some great built-in features, but sometimes thinking about creating your own transcripts of instructions that you provide for students. You know, obviously, a lot of times as a teacher, I would write, you know, step-by-step instructions or something like that mm-hmm. up on the board for my students to provide that alternative modality of sharing the information, that visual representation. But I also think about little tricks like if you wanted to transcribe your class for the purposes of a student that was gone or, you know, providing some sort of instructions, that even something simple like opening up a Google Doc and turning on your speech to text would be a great way to capture some of those instructional pieces for your students who maybe need that alternative.
Yeah, and if you do a lot of this type of thing, you want a dedicated tool for it. A tool that we use at Grant Wood and have used in the past is Otter.ai, which is a really interesting tool too. If you do lots of transcriptions or you've got a bunch of videos that you already need uploaded and transcribed on your website or somewhere else, then it does a really nice job of that. There are free plans, there are paid plans, but one you could add to your toolkit if you want to look into that.
Right. We've been talking a lot about that auditory support and providing alternatives for that, but that also extends to that visual information too. We convey a lot of meaning in our classroom using visual representation. So mm-hmm. I think about oftentimes when we're presenting on slide decks or something like that, where yeah. we have images that are conveying meanings or charts or graphs. So it's really kind of pushing us to think differently about providing the auditory version of those visual representations of information. So sometimes that is done in a virtual format where, for example, if you have a slide deck that you are sharing with your students, providing alt text on graphics. If you're not familiar with alt text, it is providing a descriptor that then is read by some sort of screen reader that provides the context or the information for the students who are interacting with that content so that those students who might have a visual impairment, for example, can still get the meaning that's being conveyed in that visual.
Yeah, I feel like alt text or alternative text is one of those things that I've tried to make a habit of doing every time I insert images now, because I think it's one of those things almost like, you know, citing sources or, you know, on an image when you put an image in and you're seeing where it's from. It's a great thing to also just add that alt text in there too. It's just good digital citizenship, I would say now, is part of that whole idea where we're just trying to be more accessible and make our content more accessible for everyone. Your students might not need it this year, but you do it this year, and maybe 3 years down the line, if you're still using the same content, it's there for that student that does need it. So great habit to develop.
And speaking of challenging yourself and really kind of pushing yourself professionally, one of the things that one of our former colleagues, Maggie Pickett, challenged me to think about is providing verbal descriptions of graphics whenever I was in front of a group of learners. And so it's a shift in thinking, but oftentimes, we're conveying meaning, and there may be times where the participants are not interacting with the content virtually. And so challenging myself to really make sure that I'm describing and talking about the images, the charts, the graphs, whatever display I have on the screen, and providing the context of what I'm seeing. And that was a really interesting challenge for me because it's not only about the people who maybe need that perception supported because they are unable to visually see that representation, but it's also about helping add context and extended information to those who are just listening so that we're making sure that the meaning is being conveyed in the way that we really want it to be conveyed. So often we are representing information, we're making this assumption, and by we, I mean me. I'm making this assumption that people are seeing the same thing I am or interpreting something in the same way I am, And if I need them to walk away with a certain understanding, it's kind of challenged me to really think about, okay, what are those things that I want them to notice or note on those visual representations that I'm using?
Well, Lynn, I'm sure our listeners will be glad to hear that you are also issuing challenges to yourself as well as challenges to the listeners that we do at the end of the podcast. We're not quite there yet, but yeah, it is good to challenge yourself with things like that. And I remember you telling me that off air, and I was thinking that would be a shift. That would be something I would have to be very deliberate about and very conscious about doing. But like you said, I think it's a no-lose situation, that type of scenario there. It's a great one to think about. So I will certainly keep that in mind the next time I'm stood in front of an audience with my slides up on the screen.
Well, as we've said before, we're not experts. We're expert learners. And so we're challenging ourselves right along with you guys.
There you go. So maybe we finish up this section of the podcast here with something we tend to do quite a lot on here, which is a little bit of myth busting. So there are some myths surrounding the use of some of these tools or some of these accommodations. Maybe we'll deal with a couple of those right now. So what's the first one we have on here, Lynn?
Well, one myth that I would like to bust is that providing alternative formats or the use of accessibility tools in some way diminishes the rigor or is, quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes like people can see me again, Jonathan, but that it's cheating. And that is so not the case. It can be a way to remove a barrier for students so that they can interact with the content in a meaningful way. You know, I think about, we talked about immersive reader and that ability to listen to the content. If I'm listening, comprehension is still happening. I still have to make meaning. My goal is not necessarily decoding by myself. I want access to the content in a meaningful way. So just challenging people to think about the purpose and also thinking about how those accessibility tools really scaffold and support students as opposed to thinking that it's a way that the kids are cheating.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it reminds me of an example that Luis Perez gave in his Dive into UDL book. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that my wife and I wear glasses. Lynn wears glasses. If you took away our glasses, we would not be able to see very well or comprehend the things that are in front of us. So, you know, that's akin to taking away some of these tools for these students in terms of how they're accessing their learning. And I think the other thing is it comes down to the standards and what it is you're working on. You know, if your objective for the lesson is not spelling, then does it matter if the are going to use a tool to put their thoughts down on the page. You know, if it is going to be extremely difficult for them to handwrite something because they have, you know, some kind of motor difficulties, you know, then, you know, isn't it much better that you get the students' thoughts and ideas down on paper in a way that is most efficient for them, that's going to get all of their thoughts and ideas out there rather than them spending 10 minutes struggling to write, you know, just a few words. So not cheating. It's a supportive, assistive technology that we can take advantage of.
Exactly. Well stated, my friend. All right. The other myth I kind of feel the need to surface is not forcing the students to use all the things. There are so many accessibility features built in. There's tools we referenced throughout our podcast today. It's my other word, besides customizing, mm-hmm. is also intentionality. Really determining which features are necessary to meet the learning needs of those students who have identified needs, but really thinking about how you can introduce components, roll things out slowly but surely to empower all students, because we want them to be aware of the supports, the features that are out there that allow them to customize, but we also want to empower choice. And so not forcing everyone to use all the things all the time, but really to have that freedom to figure out what works for them and when.
Yes, and I think that echoes what we said in our last episode about choice and wanting our students to be expert learners, where they get to that stage where they're just select the appropriate tool at the appropriate time for what it is they're working on. All of which brings us nicely to our challenge for this episode. Or as they have now become, challenges for this episode. I think we started off with this idea. We'd have, let's have one thing as a takeaway. And then we were like, well, I don't know if we can just do one thing. Or, how about you do one and I do one? So here's my first challenge for you this episode. And that is to maybe think about an upcoming lesson that you have on your schedule. What are the opportunities there to model one of these accessibility features for your students? Because I think modeling can be a really powerful thing. And, you know, it kind of tacitly gives students permission, if you like. If I can use Lynn's air quotes just for a minute, it gives them permission to use these tools and to take advantage of these tools. So what opportunities are there out there to provide alternative formats that maybe you could put in your lesson there? So thinking about trying out one of those tools that we mentioned, the Immersive Reader or Read and Write, or there's a great one called Helper Bird that we didn't even really get a whole lot of time to think about this time, but the built-in accessibility features in your device, you know, what can you use in an upcoming lesson that you can, you know, demonstrate and show students and help them realize some new ways to access their learning?
And we have a bonus challenge for you too. So oftentimes, you know, thinking about this upcoming lesson, oftentimes we are creating our own materials as teachers. So here's your bonus challenge. If you are indeed creating some materials, we challenge you to up your game just a little bit and really think about designing accessible materials from the get-go. And so we have a great resource from the AIM Center, which is about creating perceivable materials and presenting that information in multiple ways. And one of the things that I love about this site is it provides some explicit instruction of how to make your content that you're developing perceivable for your students. So things like adding those text descriptions to your images, and it talks about kind of some ways to go about adding alt text, things like including closed captioning and transcripts. So a lot of the things that we've discussed, but then there's also some additional challenges to think about in terms of your use of color and color contrast, and make sure that your text is readable and legible. So just some additional thinkabouts beyond the ones that we've surfaced in this podcast already.
And if you prefer, if it meets your learning needs, you will notice they have a built-in text-to-speech reader here on this website. So you can click play at the top, and if you are busy doing something else, you can listen to it like a podcast, like you're listening to right now, if that better meets your needs.
Exactly. So we do hope that with everything that we've provided with you today, with the challenges in specific, the episode as a whole, that this provides you with some additional grounding and is going to help you keep growing. Our music for the podcast is What's the Angle by Shane Ivers of SilvermanSound.com and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 international license.